Welcome. This is the second episode of FemWonk. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm your host, Katie Davey, and today we're going to be talking about pay equity. I had the opportunity to do an interview with Francis LeBlanc, the chair of the Coalition for Pay Equity in New Brunswick. I learned a ton from this episode, so I hope you enjoy the interview. Before we get started, I just wanted to cover a couple of definitions so we're all on the same page. The first one is pay equity. So pay equity is defined as equal pay for work of equal or comparative value. This often gets confused with pay parity, which is equal pay for equal work. So a small differential there, but it's actually quite large, and we'll get into that in this episode. Before we get started, I just wanted to flag, I am definitely still learning, and so my audio quality in the interview is not great, unfortunately, but Francis's is quite good, so we still get exactly what we're looking for. Sorry about that. Hopefully it will improve for the next episode. So without further ado, let's get into it.
Francis, thank you again so much for being on the show today. I'm really excited about our conversation.
Yeah, thank you very much for the invitation, obviously on behalf of the New Brunswick Coalition for Pay Equity.
Yes, it's my pleasure. Let's just jump right into it. I'll first actually ask if you could just give an introduction of yourself and maybe some more information about the coalition.
Yeah, absolutely. So as stated, my name is Francis LeBlanc, and I am currently the chair of the New Brunswick Coalition for Pay Equity. The coalition is a group of individuals and organization, and our primary mandate is really to educate and advocate for the adoption and implementation of adequate legislation in order to achieve pay equity for all workers in both the public and private sectors here in New Brunswick.
Awesome. Thanks so much for that additional information. And I'm sure we'll get into it a little more as the conversation progresses. The first question I actually have for you is perhaps you could just give a definition of what pay equity is.
Yeah, absolutely. So first and foremost, it's important to understand that pay equity is a human right. So it's not just a principle, but it is fundamentally a human right. So when we talk about pay equity, we usually define it as equal pay for work of equal or comparable value. So what we see is that jobs that are traditionally or predominantly held by women typically are undervalued and underpaid. There's a number of reasons for that. Some of them are systemic, some of them are historical, but the reality is that that discrimination does persist and in New Brunswick as well.
Yeah, thanks so much for that definition. I think that that is an important qualifier before we get started, just because I do find the unfortunate reality is folks oftentimes kind of equate pay equity and pay equality or pay parity to be a similar or to be the same thing, which it very much isn't. So thank you for that good definition there before we get going. I guess a question I would have for you is why do you feel that pay equity is kind of important in the world today and in the world as we see it?
Well, so just fundamentally, pay inequity is still very pervasive, especially in female-dominated jobs. So we often talk about being a woman's issue. It isn't necessarily a woman's issue. It does impact men as well. But all workers that end up in, or that work rather, in female-dominated jobs, and we know that voluntary measures do not work. And we know that it's really through adequate legislation that we can ensure that corrections and adjustments are made to the salaries as well as working conditions of those workers, and then to make sure we maintain those. So why is it still very relevant? Well, if you look at New Brunswick as a landscape and an example, there's about 65 to 70% of women who work in the private sector. And currently, without the presence of legislation, they don't benefit from the same protection that the workers would in the public sector. So I think I would say it's always been relevant, but it is more so relevant until we have that adequate legislation that protects all New Brunswick workers, not just those who work in the public sector.
No, that's a really great point. How are we doing across the country? What's What's the landscape in other provinces and jurisdictions? Is it similar to New Brunswick, or are others further along or further behind?
Yeah, so I think it would be fair to say it's a bit of a piecemeal. We can certainly do better. So the World Economic Forum just released sort of their annual rankings on a number of indicators. And in terms of pay equity, Canada ranked 50th, which is really quite troubling. So,
wow, 50th.
Yeah. So there's obviously a lot of work to be done. And part of that challenge is that there really is only a few provinces who have adequate legislation to protect workers. So I'll give a few examples. I'll start here in New Brunswick. So as I referred to, we do have pay equity legislation that was enacted in 2009 that is there for the public sector. So in terms of that legislation, most of the employers have done those preliminary evaluation and the adjustments have been made. And then the next step is obviously continuing that maintenance to make sure that the adjustments are maintained and that those discriminatory practices don't sort of creep their way back in. But the reality is that there's still no pay equity legislation for the private sector. And as I mentioned, considering that there's about 65 to 70% of women in New Brunswick that work in the private sector, there's a large proportion of women that really have no protection against pay inequity. When we look at sort of the two provinces at the forefront, so both Quebec and Ontario have both pay equity legislation for both the public and private sectors. In fact, Ontario's had it in place since 1987, so a number of decades, and Quebec 1996. But when we think of best practice, we typically think of Quebec having the more robust law, and part of that is that there is an obligation to maintain and adjust accordingly, as well as Quebec has put in place an independent commission. And there's also a conflict resolution process or measures in place that allow employees to have conflicts resolved, where we don't have that here in New Brunswick. So that may cause some challenges in implementing pay equity measures in even the public sector.
Wow, that answer was very informative. And I actually wrote down a couple of different notes here I'd like to follow up with you on. You also mentioned a few things with the Quebec context and kind of how they've set up. And I think that's actually really interesting, and kind of we can draw maybe linkages as well to the fact that I just recently saw that Quebec actually has the highest participation rate of women. I think, well, definitely of any province. I'll have to go back and see what the actual qualifier was, but it was one of the highest rates of participation in the workforce of women in the world, I think. So kind of interesting that you mentioned in Canada, they're kind of the best practice almost on pay equity. That linkage is interesting, I guess. So further to that, maybe, would you mind walking me through a bit of kind of the methodology, like how would pay equity be implemented in a workplace?
Yeah, absolutely. So what is important sort of starting off is to understand that and I think it's a critique, or not a critique, but a question that we get often is like, it seems really arbitrary. It seems really subjective. How can you tell that an administrative assistant, for example, has the same value as a machine operator, for example, or whatever male comparator we choose? But in fact, it's not an arbitrary process. It is a rigorous methodology that's used. So what typically happens, contrary to pay parity, so just to clarify, pay parity is like if you have a man and a woman in the exact same job, they should be paid the same. Way pay equity is that there is jobs that are female dominated, that they're not, there's not necessarily that male comparator. So part of the challenge is to find an adequate male comparator to compare to that female dominated job, and then to adjust based on the value or the exactly the value found. And how you do that is based on the comparison of four factors. So you look at the skill set needed for the job, the level of responsibility, the efforts, and the working conditions. So oftentimes, I'll use the same example as I use. If you, you know, subjectively think of an administrative assistant and a machine operator, they're intrinsically very different jobs. However, when you break it down in terms of skill, responsibility, effort, and working conditions, they actually have very similar value and should be paid the same. Now, the reality is that most administrative assistants that tend to be female are often paid less than machine operators. So this is where you realize that there is pay inequity, and this is how you would do it. Now, if there's not a direct male comparator, you would build a you would compare based on a number of male comparators, and then you would do sort of regression analysis based on those factors. So, you know, it is a robust methodology, and there's an evaluation process and engagement of both employee and employer. So it is quite robust, but it should not be something that is feared, but rather that it's already been done, there's tools available, and they should be used and available for any employer that is looking to rectify those discriminatory practices.
Yeah, and I think although, yes, of course, it is quite a rigorous and probably daunting task for an employer to look at for the first time, but that being said, once you've got those kind of evaluations in your own workplace, it's not like you're going to have to really reevaluate the, you know, administrative assistant position, for example. Like, you can kind of, I think, I don't know, correct me if I'm wrong there, but kind of once you really go through the first round, the maintenance will be much easier because you took really that big first step.
Yeah, and honestly, so if you look at the Quebec example, so they've, you know, I think it would be foolish to say that it's been a success from the start. I think they've had a lot of learning experiences, and they've made adjustments accordingly. But what they found is that by implementing pay equity legislation and essentially sort of forcing people to go through the exercise, they basically, especially for smaller employers, they improve their human resources practices. So in a lot of contexts, they didn't really have job descriptions. They didn't fully understand the roles and responsibility of their employees. So by going through the pay equity process, they were able to build those tools and then to build some standardization in their human resources practices. So the benefits is not just for the workers, but in a lot of cases, it's also for the employer.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And actually, I think that I saw somewhere, and you might have more information on this, but basically studies would suggest that when employees feel that they're fairly compensated for the job that they're doing, they're more likely to be kind of more engaged and productive in the workplace.
Yeah, that seems to be the case based on studies. And that's also the case just talking to workers in New Brunswick. Caregiving workers in the caregiving sectors are grossly underpaid, and the working conditions in some situations are quite problematic. And they care a lot about the work, but it's very difficult, I think, to give fully when you are so grossly underpaid. So, you know, I think there is an engagement, there's a retention as well as a recruitment benefit as well. As we know, retraining an employee is very, very expensive. So obviously, if you find quality workers, you train them, and then you keep them, then there's benefits in that sense as well.
That's a really interesting example. I'm happy that you brought up the caregiving sector, because when I was first learning about pay equity, one of the examples that was given to me was basically kind of imagine two 12 or 13 year old kids, one's a boy, one's a girl. The girl on the side does, you know, 4 or 5 hours of babysitting every week, makes, you know, $20 for that work. The boy shovels driveways, for example, or mows lawns, you know, puts in maybe a half an hour and gets paid about $20. And that, I think, really resonated with me, because I remember when I was 12 or 13 and I would do, well, maybe I was a few years older than that, I guess, but I would do overnight babysitting and still only get paid about, you know, $20 or $30. And it's funny that when I use that reference and kind of what you mentioned about the value of a particular role, people will often say back to me, well, actually, wouldn't the babysitting be of a higher value? And you know, there are obviously different factors there. The shoveling of the driveways, et cetera, is probably more physically daunting, but not always. So it's interesting that you mentioned kind of in the actual kind of career path of caregiving, although as a society, we might actually put a higher value on that, those wages are not at all reflective of that.
Yeah, it's very interesting. So the caregiving sector, and certainly in New Brunswick, is sort of one of the more high priority areas that really needs investments and leadership. It's interesting because it's that care component that we haven't quantified and really paid accordingly. And really, if you think about it, these are the people who are taking care of our most vulnerable, right? So be it children, be it people of an advanced age, people with disabilities, and we really don't value that care. And there's historical reasons for it. So if you think of who used to take care of sort of the vulnerable, it used to be families, maybe the church. And that work was basically done by women mostly and was done for free, right? So now that it's become institutionalized, we haven't really brought up the investments to where they should be. And part of that, I think, is historical reasons that we haven't historically valued that work because it was women's work and women's work wasn't paid. So unfortunately, we're still sort of suffering from that, but they're grossly underpaid and the working conditions are very, very difficult. So, you know, to take care of children or to take care of people with disabilities physically can be very, very taxing as well as emotionally. You know, you are not only a caregiver, but you are almost a family member, if not a friend, if not a confidant to your clients. So it's way, you know, it's even more intensive or more invested than we often think about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think honestly, we could have an entire other discussion on really the valuing of women's work, even when we go further of whether that's, you know, caring for all household duties and just the emotional labor as well. But I do have a few more things I'd like to chat with you about. I'd like to circle back, I guess, kind of to the more national landscape. The federal government recently announced that they would be implementing proactive pay equity in federally regulated industries, I guess. Yeah, maybe tell me a bit more about your thoughts on that and if you think that will impact kind of the rest of the country as far as moving forward with pay equity.
Yeah, so I think the federal announcement certainly was applauded and welcome, and it really demonstrated a clear commitment to address gender-based discrimination in the workplace and by tackling pay inequity in federally regulated sectors. And what's been interesting is it has created a ripple effect amongst provinces and even other jurisdictions. So what we've seen is an increased awareness as well as increased presence in both public and political discourse, talking about pay equity, talking about the need for more. We've certainly seen it here in New Brunswick during the last provincial elections, and we're still seeing it now. So I just wanted to clarify the announcement that was made for those who may not be aware. So in late October, the Honorable Paddy Hadju, the Honorable Minister Marianne Monsef, as well as the Honorable Scott Bryson introduced proactive pay equity legislation for federally regulated sectors. So those are the workers that would fall within the purview of the federal government. And in fact, the act was adopted and received royal assent in December 2018. And as you mentioned, it is proactive pay equity legislation, which would mandate all employers to do evaluations for compensation practices and ensure that when discriminatory practices are identified, that they would be corrected so that the wages would be adjusted or the working conditions or whatever it may be. And what's also interesting is with the introduction of the act, there's also the introduction of a pay equity commissioner that would be appointed within the Canadian Human Rights Commission, which is really important to note because the pay equity commissioner would do both the role of education, but also enforcement, which is also very important.
Right, absolutely. And thank you for providing that further information. So just so I'm clear, proactive basically means that there's an automatic trigger in reviewing of practices, right? That would be kind of when we think about just at the beginning of our conversation and you talked about voluntary, those would be kind of the two ends of the spectrum.
Yep. So there would be a process in place that would be triggered at certain amount of times instead of having, let's say, a complaint-based process where there is pay inequity as suspected, then you do a complaint and then an evaluation is triggered. So it will be on, the onus will be on the employer versus the employee to do that process and then to adjust and maintain those.
Perfect. Thanks for that clarification. And actually further to that, so I think part of this discussion and further to what you've mentioned, there is actually now a broader conversation around pay equity that is seeming to be happening, which is good news. But it is sometimes seen as a kind of complex process and confused with, you know, pay parity or pay equality. So from your perspective, what can be done to reach a more broader audience? And you know, when I was thinking about this, my kind of question as well was, you know, is it necessary to reach a broader audience, or is it necessary to, you know, reach the audience of the folks who need to be implementing this? I think just actually from your last answer on the kind of complaint-based process, it is obviously important to reach a broader audience just for folks who might be experiencing pay inequities. So I kind of answered my own question there, but I think I'd be interested in your, again, your opinion on what can be done to reach a broader audience.
Yeah, so I think it's both. And the reason I say both is that we certainly do need that clear leadership and commitment to change. So that would usually come from government to put in place legislation that would trigger that change. I think what we recognize is that, you know, voluntary measures don't work. So legislation is really important. And oftentimes the argument that we use, that we hear a lot is that the private sector isn't ready or the terrain isn't ready. And I think that isn't true. I think we've been preparing the terrain for over three decades and it's now time for action. And then ensuring that there's resources and tools available for those employers to do the change necessary. And further to your question, so interestingly, in 2017, the New Brunswick Coalition for Pay Equity launched their Now NB campaign, which was done mostly on social media. And the purpose was to increase awareness for the need for pay equity legislation. So we were looking for clear commitments from all political parties to put forth to support pay equity legislation for the private sector, but also demonstrate why pay equity matters for New Brunswickers. And it's been really interesting. So we use social media as our primary platforms, and it allowed us to reach a larger audience and really start the conversation. So I think it is important for our strategies to be multi-pronged so that we can affect change up top, but also inform the base, if you will. Because what we've seen is that workers that better understand their rights, especially in those sectors that we talked about, are starting to mobilize. They're starting to ask for things. They're starting to be aware of the realities and the inequities that exist. So it's very important to have those conversations for everyone to be aware and then for people to ask for what they deserve. So as I said, I think the reality is that now we need action and we need clear leadership. And the reality is that New Brunswickers deserve better.
Yeah, I love that final point there. And it really bothers me when folks kind of do use that language of, you know, private sector isn't ready, or, you know, there are too many costs on private sector already. It bothers me so much because what is being unsaid there is that we're expecting the work of women to subsidize the private sector. It's unacceptable, first of all, but it's just sad that still as a society, we are in a place where we expect women to subsidize the private sector, really.
Yeah, it is the reality. You cannot build a strong economy without a strong workforce. So we can certainly help to enhance the environment for entrepreneurs and business owners and private sectors. But you also, at the same time, have to make sure that the terrain is welcoming, that the pay is there for the workforce. And unfortunately, women tend to get the short end of the stick, if you will. And for too long, we've built this argument of strong economies on the back of New Brunswick women.
we've been chatting for a while now, so I'll just actually ask if you've got any final thoughts you'd like to leave us with or anything we didn't talk about today.
Yeah, so I just want to reiterate that we will continue to push for pay equity legislation for the private sector, not only because it's the right thing to do, but it is a human right. And we are looking for clear political support for pay equity legislation, as well as commitments for investments and salaries, and certainly starting with the caregiving sector, which we've talked about. And when we think of pay equity, it's not only a question of wages. It also means greater independence, greater security for these workers, and stronger economies and communities all around. So we very much look forward to the opportunity to continue to work with governments, to work with workers, as well as other stakeholders to advance this really important work.
And if folks in the business community are looking for resources on how to implement pay equity in their workplaces, where can they go to find those resources?
Yeah, so the Bureau of Status of Women have a number of resources available to them. There's modules, there's learning opportunities as well. In terms of if they want to learn more about pay equity or the coalition's work, we certainly are there to facilitate that knowledge transfer, and they can certainly visit us on the website, which is equity.com. And there's also information on how to get involved and become a member.
Perfect. And how can folks find you and the coalition in addition to the website?
Yeah, so we certainly encourage people to visit the website. We are located in Moncton, but often host events across the province. So certainly stay tuned, be part of the distribution list as well. What I would also say is that if you are interested in the work that's being done and you support the ongoing efforts, we are in the middle of our annual fundraising campaign. So we certainly encourage everyone to consider giving, and all that information is available on the website. So one of our key targets has always been to engage with New Brunswickers, engage with workers. So please reach out to myself, Joanne Perron, who's the executive director, or anyone in the superb team at the New Brunswick Coalition for Pay Equity.
Fantastic. Well, thank you again so much, Frances, for joining us today. I think that this was a fantastic conversation and hopefully very informative to our listeners.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for tuning in to episode 2 of FemWonk. If you want to join the conversation, please feel free to follow us on both Facebook and Twitter at FemWonk. You can also directly visit our website, www.femwonk.com. And if you liked this episode, please subscribe and give us a review. Thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.